Thank you so much for having us today, Florence, in your home. It's December 4th, 2010. I'm interviewing Florence Garvey. We're at 43 Nelson Avenue in Mill Valley. Florence has lived in Marin County for 62 years and at 43 Nelson for 56 years. Your father was in the Army, and you traveled around a lot.
He was.
Can you tell me about that?
I was born at the Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C. on Mother's Day, which I think is not everybody can claim that. My father was moved from one spot to the other, and before he joined the Army, he had taught high school in Wyoming, and he really enjoyed that. So he requested ROTC duty and was assigned to Pomona College in Claremont. So that's where my memory begins. I was three when we lived there, and we lived there for 5 years, and then we went to Schofield Barracks, which is on Island Oahu, and it was the Army's biggest military installation. It was interesting because they had Air Corps, field artillery, cavalry, infantry, the whole bit. And on special occasions, they would turn everybody out for a massive parade. That was fun. And then we moved from there to Salt Lake City to Fort Douglas, which is a Civil War outpost. It was sort of like the same time as our Fort Point, built for possible southern invasion. It's a lovely, very small post, and it was used during the Olympics, so it was exciting to see that the quarters where we lived, they were being used for different occasions there. So it was a lovely time in my life. I loved being there, moving from Hawaii to icicles and snow in the wintertime. And then my father got ROTC duty again at Lehigh University in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and that's where I went to high school. Then I came to college at Pomona and graduated from there. And I got a teacher's credential at the graduate school and came up here in Marin County in 1948 to teach in Ross. So that gets us up to me and being in Marin County.
Wow, that was really fast. Your first job was with the agriculture department?
I did. That was for 2 years after I graduated from college. I was a botany major, and it was wartime, and all nurseries where they sell plants were inspected. So you did that, and it was interesting. You even went into the dime stores that might sell plants, and the ones you hated the most were the cactus, because they were always down on the ground, and it was hard to really see what you were doing. I forgot to say that in my going to school, I skipped first grade because I learned to read early. And when we lived in Salt Lake, they'd had a financial crunch in their budget, and so they decided to make ends meet. They would eliminate eighth grade. I mean, just take it out. So I was 2 years ahead, and I graduated from high school when I was still 16. No, I was 16 by a month. And then when I graduated from college, because it was wartime, we were on an accelerated program. I was 19. So it was sort of an early start on things. But I did. I worked for the Los Angeles County Agriculture Department inspecting nurseries all over Los Angeles County. I had a ration card, a funky old car. It was interesting, but I knew it was not something I wanted to do forever. We were replacing, there were three of us that were girls, replacing men who'd gone off to wartime sort of things. So that's when then I went to graduate school and got a teaching credential.
What did you teach at Ross?
I had fifth grade first. I had 37 children. It was, shall we say, a baptism by fire. 37 is a very full classroom. And I did that for 2 years, and then I had third grade for four years, and that was sheer heaven. It was lovely, a nice age to teach. I think the teacher is great, and they're not into peer pressure as much as 10-year-olds are.
That's true. So let's see. After that, you went to a boatyard and met somebody very special.
I did. I had bought a small sailboat from a parent in Ross, and I realized I needed some help on some leaks that I had. So I went to a boatyard that was on the Sandersville Canal and met a young man who was very attractive. And he told me what I should do. And as it turned out, he was getting ready to go in a Trans-Pac race. That's Trans-Pacific was the from Los Angeles to Honolulu. It's in the odd years. So this was 53 that was. And one of the teachers at the school had a sailboat, and they had sold it recently, and it was getting ready to go, and the young man that I had bought was to be a crew person. So the teacher at the school said, "You really should get to know this person." I said, "Uh-huh, sure." So when he came back from the race, and they had gone to Honolulu, then they also raced from Honolulu to Tahiti, and then brought the boat back to Honolulu, so they did a lot of sailing. Well, he came back in just about Halloween time, came to see me, and by Christmas we were engaged, and by Easter the following year we were married. So we didn't take too long to decide this is what we wanted to do, and we were married for 55 years.
That's amazing.
Living in this house. He had already bought this house because it had a basement in it where he could keep all of his equipment, and he was building a boat right underneath where we're sitting today. And that was his lifetime. That's all he really thought about, besides me, of course. He'd been interested in boats since he was a little boy. Had gone to the Mare Island Naval Apprentice School. And I think he just knew, without anybody telling him, how to put things together. In three dimensions was very easy for him. For me, I could do two dimensions, but after that, I'm lost.
Tell me a little bit about some of the boats that Bill built.
Well, he had, we counted them up once, there were 18 boats, which is not as much as somebody might do. He designed the last two himself. No, he didn't. One of the boats that he designed next to the last was 27 feet long, and he named it for one of our children. It was a cruising boat and not a fast sailer. And when our second daughter was in high school at Tam High, in the springtime, he was all ready to set sail for Hawaii. So she did an independent study program from the school and went with him. She was just then 18, and they had one crew person, and the three of them sailed to Hawaii. And they had no telephone and no communication. And I thought, if one more person said to me, "What do you hear from them?" Because I didn't. I just had to sit and wait until they got there, and they could then let me know. But they did get there safely, and I flew out with the two younger children, and we spent a month in Hawaii, going from Hilo to Lahaina on Maui, and then eventually to Oahu and Honolulu. And then he stayed with the boat and sailed it back with two other crew persons, and I came home with the three children and the daughter, who was in high school just in time for graduation.
Oh, how wonderful.
It is. It's an experience to do something like that with your father that not everybody can do.
Especially on a boat he built.
Yes, it was a very comfortable. He probably spent 2 or 3 years planning it in his mind, and it proved to be absolutely wonderful. At the moment, it's up in the Puget Sound area. And then he built another boat, which he started at the age of 80 to build it, from a magazine article he'd seen in 1938, and had just a single page from the magazine, and then built it from that. It was 37 feet long, and finished it when he was 86, and got to go sailing, and then he died when he was 90. I think that's a great deal of faith to start a job like that yourself. I mean, he didn't have people helping him. It was from the bottom up to do it.
Wow.
Just like this house. He did everything himself here from the bottom up. Although he did have roofing done, not that he couldn't, it's just that it took longer than he had time to do.
Well, you had three remodels here. Can you tell
yes.
me about those?
Well, this was one remodel, this living room that we added on. And then we put the bedroom, which is towards the front of the house, with the fireplace out there. And then the last one was the back of the house. We went out 10 feet. It's nice. We have 2.5 lots here, but we have lots of space in which to do this. And there was nothing he could not make or do.
It's a beautiful property. I know you've seen a lot of changes in the neighborhood since you've been here. You want to tell me about some of that?
Well, this was the Goheen development, George Goheen. There were probably four house plans And by turning them one way or another, they seemed like different floor plans, but they were essentially the same. And there were a few houses that were not Goheens, and the space next to us was empty for many, many years because it was a drainage area and the city owned it. A woman bought the property from the city and moved the house that is there now onto the property, and the house came from across the street from the Lutheran Church out at the beginning of Tennessee Valley. It was a little board and batten, attractive little one-story house, and there still is sort of a studio, which I'm not sure if the highway patrol uses it for an office, but the grounds where the house sat is a park, and you can go have picnic lunch there, and I know someone had a birthday party for a child there. It's the creek runs right next to it, and it's a lovely little spot. And we bought the house next door, so we now have two houses on Nelson.
That's great. So the Goheen development, what was that called, Sycamore Park at that
yes.
time?
Yes, and it's all the houses down on Oxford and Plymouth and Valley Circle. Many of those are Goheen houses, and certainly on Nelson there are a lot. There have been a few houses that were torn down totally, and a large house put up. I find that terribly distressing to change the neighborhood as much as that does. I mean, you'd say that, well, that's what you've done to your house. Well, I didn't tear the house down. We've added onto it and kept the same general demeanor of the house.
Plus, you have a lot of space around your house.
We do. There's just a house that's just now being finished up the street where they've kept the same footprint of the house but added onto it. And I think, how do they fit the floor area ratio, FAR, is that what they call it, floor area ratio? You have to have so much. It seems like they have no yard left, but I haven't walked through the house. But I'm used to a lot of space here, which when you get a lawnmower, you realize how much space you do have.
You do have a lot of space for our neighborhood.
So I think this house was started in 1915, and one of the persons who lived here, not the ones who sold the house to build it before that, was Shel Cavalli, who has the British Motor Cars in San Francisco. So I think a claim to fame, if you would think about someone like that who lived here.
Someone was telling me, I don't know if you remember this or not, you may not have been here, but that when they started the Goheen development, that there was a big landfill.
Well, I've heard that the other end of Nelson going towards Blackdale was called Pansy Hill, and that they took a lot of that. That might be what you're thinking about, to move that. It still is uphill to go out to Blackdale, but not as extensively as it might have been in the very early days.
And then they used the soil from Pansy Hill to fill in down at Oxford and
right.
Surrey?
Right, and we filled in with many truckloads when they were starting to put the freeway in, or the interchange, at the end of Blythedale. And when we first lived here, to go out onto Highway 101, you had to sit and wait for the traffic to get a spot to go quickly across Highway 101, and it was a bit hairy. That was before they put, you know, the cloverleaf, as it were. And so when they were doing the cloverleaf, there was truckloads and truckloads of fill, and that's what we put in all of this whole area between us and the creek, as we speak, which is the Alto. It's called Alto Way, and it's a drainage. It's also known as the Ryan Ditch. And when we get a high tide and 2 or 3 inches of rain, we get water in our basement. And people say, well, why didn't you put a sump pump in? Well, there's no place to pump it. You would only be pumping back into the same flood area. So after 7 or 8 hours, the water goes down, and you just learn to keep stuff up off the floor.
Where does the Ryan Ditch go, do you know the extent?
It goes down to the middle school, and they put a gate on it, which really helps. I'm not too sure how the hydraulics of that works, but it somehow keeps the tide a little bit more under control.
Okay.
It's wonderful for frogs. In the springtime, it's an absolute croaking, noisy thing, and it just sounds wonderful.
What have you noticed, any changes in the wildlife that has been here since you've lived here?
Well, yeah, I have a planter box at the bottom of the stairs, and I had some Columbine, and I came out, and the Columbine were all neatly chomped off. So it's deer which come down. Occasionally there are raccoons, but I think the deer get down here by mistake, but I was really sort of horrified that my little plants were chomped off. Crows. Oh, I suppose we get crows now and then. And I don't think, and I see very few birds. Sometimes we get warblers and things moving through, eating the berries on the Cotoni ouster pyracanthus, but I don't see a great variety of birds here, which is sort of sad.
It is sad. You haven't really noticed any, like, maybe there used to be something that's not anymore.
No.
No, because this area is pretty much city. I think of us as being in the city.
Yeah.
So not a lot of wildlife.
I don't even hear owls at night. You'd think that would... We have a huge, big pine tree behind us and several redwoods. You'd think would be a great bird refuge.
Can you tell me anything about the schools that you've noticed and changes over the years?
Well, our children all went to Park School. And I know that many parents don't let their little children walk to school, but ours did. And it's a fair distance to walk, and you have to pay attention where you are. And I, of course, would look at the clock and think, well, she ought to be coming home pretty soon now. And then she'd come, I have four daughters, come trudging in, and they all walked to Park School. The school has not changed that much. I did a lot of PTA work there. I remember doing hot dogs on Thursday down in the kitchen, and that was as much of a hot lunch as Park School ever had. It was interesting to do. One of the persons who helped was Phyllis Faber, who was well known for establishing with Ellen Strauss MALT, the Marin Agricultural Land Trust. So you got to meet all kinds of interesting people with PGA work.
What else did you do?
Well, I know the library.
Oh, the library.
The school library. I was as fascinated with children's literature. I'd come home with stacks of books. And one of the books I remember getting was on the Bayeux Tapestry, which is in France. And it was one of these books that told you just enough that caught your interest with page after page. So when we were traveling through that area, that was something I thought, I've really got to go see this. It was all because I found this book at the children's library at Park School. The nonfiction for children is staggering. It's just wonderful. Isaac Asimov, for example, has lots of books for children on science. And I think the imagination in children's fiction is just marvelous. One of the things that I've done for our grandchildren is to buy a book that I like, and then I would read it on tape and talk to the child that I was reading it for, saying, now such and such, now look on this page, do you see that what she's wearing? She's going to be doing something different. Then I would make a bag for the book so they could put it all together. And I would take a picture out of the book and take the book to a photocopying machine and photocopy and shrink it down so it was a tiny little one, and then I'd stick that on the tape so the child who couldn't yet read could tell what tape this was because it matched, the picture on the tape matched the book. So it was fun to do, and I realized that I'm missing doing that because my grandchildren are now grown and reading long since. But I noticed Hallmark has an ad on TV about two little girls and grandma's reading to them. I thought, uh-huh, I was ahead of them. It was fun to do, and it was something special. Each one had a book that I had read, or two books that I had read to them.
That is special, yep. And you were ahead of your time. They are exactly marketing that whole idea right now.
Yeah, it's fun to do.
That was great, Florence. And you had four daughters and were very active with Girl Scouts.
Yes, so I had a Girl Scout troop. And I also did a lot in 4-H. I've always loved dogs. And the guide dog puppies were always raised by children in 4-H. It was one of the projects that you could do in 4-H aside from raising chickens or sewing or doing something else. And the idea was that we met weekly out at the Northgate Mall. And you wanted to socialize your puppy. So when the puppy went into training, they had been in sidewalks, traffic areas, they had been in and out of swinging doors. They'd been up and down stairs, which is not to put down anything they do with guide dogs, but it was sort of a step ahead, kind of a kindergarten idea. And whenever the family went somewhere who had the puppy, I encouraged them to go take the puppy with them, to ride in the car, go to grandma's house for dinner, and so that they were met the world outside. We had maybe 10 or 12 children who passed through this. I think I did it for about 4 or 5 years. It's very rewarding. All guide dogs are free to the person who gets them and is free to stay at the school to learn to use the dog. We've raised 3 adult dogs, breeding stock dogs, and we've had 5 puppies. It's one of those things a child can take part in to do something for somebody else that's very meaningful. And they could go out collecting UNICEF or something like that, but it's not the long-term project that having a dog maybe for a year, starting out as a 3-month-old puppy and then returning to guide dogs when they're maybe 15 months old.
Okay, we're rolling again.
Okay, Florence, we were talking about the guide dogs and the puppies and that sort of thing. How about the puppies that you raised? You said you raised 5 puppies.
Yep.
How many of those went on to be guide dogs? Did all of them graduate?
No, they didn't. It was disappointing. Only one did. They have about a 50% rejection rate of puppies. It's not that they're not neat little dogs and make good family dogs. They may have different reasons for rejecting them. Sometimes it's physical ones with their hips for not being absolutely sound. Could be they're noise shy. It could be that they are, what are they called, too soft. The dog trembles like that when you speak harshly to them or whatever it is. So they need a dog that's a little bit more independent. Not anything that you've done, but we did have one. And I encourage people to go to a guide dog graduation. It's once a month. It's open to the public. And you get to see the entire grounds, walk through the kennels and see it. And one of the great things, and it's just a very tender moment, is the child who raised the dog comes to the graduation to see their dog ready to go out into the big world. And it's a beautiful grounds, and it's supported by private donations. There's no federal or state funding of it. So it's people buying postcards or people who send a donation in, and it's beautiful grounds. It's, as you know, in Northgate. And you just need to call up and say, when is your next graduation, and get yourself there.
Well, when you first started, it was quite different than what it looks like today.
It was just one little building and the kennels of maybe 10 or 12 runs. And then it had started in Palo Alto, and then it moved up to San Rafael maybe in the later 40s. And we got a dog about 1956. We had a dog. That's when we started. So it's one of those things that you can do for somebody else that you never regret the time that it took to have it. Black Labs are my favorite. We've had Golden Retrievers and Black Labs, but my heart melts with a big Black Lab looking at you.
So tell me a little bit more. We talked about Girl Scouts briefly, but were you the Scout leader?
I was the Scout leader. With Joan Haxton, she and I shared it. Joan's no longer living, but she had a number of children. And it was every week. We met at the church that's on East Blythedale. It's not the Seventh-day Adventist. It's one at Sycamore in East Blythedale. And they were very kind to let us use a community room there. It was a busy time, and we'd sometimes go out to Samuel Taylor Park for an overnight, and it took a lot of planning, and it was fun to do.
I bet you were good at teaching them sewing.
Well, I didn't do the projects. We could find somebody who would. I was there for the general meetings and sort of finding other helpers to do it. But yes, I have done a lot of sewing with 4 daughters. You better learn to sew.
What were some of your favorite projects that the Girl Scouts did?
Oh, I hadn't thought much about that. I can't seem to think just offhand. It would take a little bit more time to...
Did you do cookie sales?
Oh, yes. I had a garage full of cookies more than once. What else did we do? We had cookies. And children could do badges by themselves or get someone to do it, like sewing and cooking. And I remember Ruth Scott, who lives in this wonderful house up above Park School. She died a year or two ago. It's a house that they built pretty much themselves out of brick. Did the cooking group one time, and that was lovely.
How about they did go to Bothine for campouts?
They went to Bothine, yes, but I didn't go with them. It was probably with a larger group. I'm drawing a blank on this. Would you think I could remember?
Well, no, I just thought that would be an interesting thing to see what you used to do, if it was the same as what people do now. I know that they sell a lot of cookies now.
Yeah.
A lot of cookies. I didn't know if there was other things that you did back then. What other projects did 4-H do other than guide dogs?
Oh, there could probably be just any number of things, and there would be meetings of the 4-H, San Rafael 4-H group. And the big thing that we did with the guide dogs was to sponsor a play day. And a play day means that you'd have children from all over the Bay Area who could come to this with their puppies, and you would have a obstacle course. Remember, we had one at a school in Novato on Center Street, and you would set up different occasions of walking up some stairs, or having them stop and do something, and we also put out a lunch for them, and we might have had 50 or 60 kids come with their puppies to this. And it was one of those things that other 4-H groups would put on, and you could go with your dog and your puppy and your daughter or child and go to one anywhere in the Bay Area, and you'd get ribbons and you'd get prizes, and it was exciting to see that your dog was improving. And that was a huge effort to put this play day on, and they have an annual play day at the guide dog school themselves, where lots of children come with their puppies to this one.
Did the kids in 4-H enter things in the county fair?
No, ours. We had a booth with pictures and members in their 4-H uniforms, white, with their little caps on. Out at the Civic Center, telling people about how you could raise a puppy, apply for one, and do it. But as far as doing anything else at the fair, that was the extent of it.
Okay. Well, I know that you've been very involved in the Outdoor Art Club. Can you tell me some of the things you've done there?
Huh. Yes. I've done grounds. I've done building preservation. I've been house chairman, rental chairman, treasurer. That was not good. I do not keep books all that well. I didn't abscond with money, but just knowing exactly how to do a balance sheet was not something that I could do. Rentals was interesting because you lived in a total fear that you might double book the place. I never did, and I don't think it's happened, but it's possible. And that time we were not on the computer, and the phone could ring any time, day or night, of people saying, "I just got engaged and we want to be married." So you'd have to say, you know, when it was available and what the good things were about coming to do it. It was a fun job, and they've computerized it now, and I think you get a recording and you leave your name and somebody calls you back. It's a little bit different. I like being in the Outdoor Club because you got to know people who were younger to older. And the same thing, I belong to the American Association of University Women. And when I first came into the group, Letty Evans was a member. She was a lady, seemed very old to me, probably my age now. And she lived in a house that's just up above Lytton Square. And she had married her husband, who was a Chinese missionary. She was just a wonderful lady. That the word lady you can apply to some people and not to others, but she was one of those. And her niece now lives in her house, and she belongs to the Outdoor Club. The house was designed by, I can't say the man's name, it was kind of a Swedish name. And it was on the house tour one year, anyhow. So it's interesting that you can belong to a group like the Outdoor Club to meet people who are very young, and some who've been in the club a long time, or may join the club in their later years, as I did, and have stayed with the club and been a part of it. We've had weddings of our children there. We had a 40th wedding anniversary tea dance there. That was fun to do in the springtime.
Well, what was your fondest memory of being on the grounds committee?
Oh, I guess when everything stayed alive and the deer didn't eat everything. Try to make the budget stretch over what you wanted to buy for the grounds, or to keep groundskeepers who would come, keep the weeds at bay, to make people happy with what you had planted and the color that you might be able to do. It's a rewarding job. Any one of them is.
How about the house committee? That can be a nightmare.
Well, we've had some wonderful men who have done all the work for keeping it clean and moving the tables for renters and so on. So you always hope that whomever it happened to be, that they stayed on and didn't call you Friday night and saying, I'm not feeling very well, I can't. And you think, oh Lord, there's a wedding of 200 tomorrow and they want their table set up. I mean, that never happened, but it's one of those things that you thought it might. So.
Okay. How about the treasurer? You said that wasn't your favorite
no,
job.
No, that was the first job I did. Let's just not even go there.
What other memories do you have with the Outdoor Art Club?
It's just such a beautiful spot. Maybeck, if you want to get started on his architecture, realize there are a few Maybeck houses in this area, but not as many as there are in the East Bay. And it's kind of like somebody's lovely old house. And when I was rental chairman, you could tell people it's the nice thing about it is you can set it up in almost any way that you like. People would say, now where does the head table go? And I'd say, it's wherever you want it to be. There's nothing set up about this. You can put tables outside, you can have no tables, you can have wedding however that you want. So it's a spot that you can enjoy as you might your house. It doesn't feel institutional at all.
What about AAUW? What all have you done with them?
Well, I was treasurer for that too one time. That was interesting to try to, again, do a balance sheet. Write checks is easy enough. Taking money in is easy. I have been a chairman of different sections, like the book group. Our book group did reviews instead of everybody reading one book and talking about it. The daytime books, you did a book, whatever. If you agreed to do a book review, you could do any book that you chose. It could be fiction, nonfiction. It could be a cookbook, a series of them, whatever you liked. And then there's a play reading group where we get a box of plays, 10 paperbacks, and there are 10 of us in the group, and we just read the plays cold. Sometimes they're been made into movies later, and sometimes they're plays you've never heard of. Some plays are judged to be perfectly awful. Why did they ever choose this one to put into the go-around? The plays go to something like 60 different study groups. So whoever organizes it knows exactly how to make it do it, because we've never read the same play twice. And the plays come faithfully. We have a great time reading the plays. We have done some fundraisers at the Fall Arts Festival, selling fudges, I seem to remember, pretzels another time. Again, it's one of those groups where you get quite a cross-section of people who have PhDs, possibly, and some people who are just bachelors.
Do you have any memories of, say, Memorial Day parades here?
Yeah, one of our children was, they were in Girl Scouts. No, Brownies, with Verna Perino, who spent a lot of time in Mill Valley, and they walked with their Brownie uniforms. Then another one, she got into a clown costume and walked down Miller Avenue in that. It's fun to go over and just watch it go by. I was going to say about the old Safeway. When I was first married, it was up where the West America Bank is now, on West East Blythedale, and the parking was as it is now. To realize the Safeway started out in those sort of humble beginnings and then moved down to Camino Alto and then enlarged even from that to what it is now. And the Purity store, which was down here in the Blythedale corner, that, so there's been a few changes of just grocery shopping.
And you remember Mill Valley Market?
I didn't ever go into that too much. I guess the parking might have been one thing, and maybe price-wise, Safeway might seem... I was thinking back of the Safeway when my two older children were little. They had a bench that you could sit down on, and it had a sort of a table, and they had little golden books, so you could park your child there while you did your shopping. I don't think anybody today would feel safe parking your child in a spot in the, near the entrance to the store, and or with kindergartners walking to Park School. I just knew that they could do it, and that's what they did. Well, things have changed that way, I would say.
Wow. Any other businesses that you remember?
Well, the furniture store, the Swearingens had a furniture store. Let's see, what is in there now? Florence Tyler. Is that his name? Mm-hmm. Remember buying some furniture there, and it's gone through a number. Was Barney's Hardware Store moved in there? I think the general feel of Mill Valley has remained the same. The storefronts may be different, and restaurants have come and go. Good heavens, when I think of the money I've given to La Ginestra over a period of years, we've always enjoyed being there. Nice family-run place. My life has been really pretty much right here. I kept all of the books for my husband. You'd think I would get through the treasurer's part a little more easily, but that... And when he did jobs on boats, he gave everybody an itemized billing of exactly all the materials that went into it. And I kept the card file. I made a card file on the prices of all kinds of screws. So you had oval head screws, round head screws, flat bottom screws. I mean, it was just of everything that was in a boat building business. And I would type it and send it out. So I was busy. And we got to our third child. I said, I can't do it anymore. So we then got a secretary, and he built an office in the boatyard that he had on the canal. And so then I stayed pretty much here organizing children. And it seemed like we had children a lot, with 13 years between the first and the last. You just, as I said, I was in PTA forever.
You had probably done all the jobs in PTA by then.
Well, a few.
Well, how about the Dipsy race? Did anybody you know ever run the Dipsy?
No, but one time we went up and sat on some stairs just above where the creek goes through, and I had never done that before, and I thought, I wonder if that man's really going to make it all the way, because by the time they got to the first 20 steps, it seemed like they were well out of breath and looked like they really were not fit to do it. But no, I've not done anything more than that.
And none of the girls ran?
No, but we were into horses a lot. We had horses out at Tennessee Valley Stables. It was a cooperative. When we first joined, we did a lot of heavy-duty work out there, making pens, putting up fencing. Bill installed a water system.
Wow.
It was. And then he got a horse to join one of our daughters who had a horse, so... It's a whole other world.
How was it run then? Was it part of the Park Service? Do you know?
Yes, it was part of the Park Service. And we were constantly being threatened that we weren't going to be able to be individuals, or cooperative is, I guess, a better word for it, because we had to do everything ourselves. And so now I think it's much more under the park domination.
And I know that at one point you led some history walks for the Historical Society.
That was fun. You learned you had to memorize the walk. And I love Mill Valley. I was very attached to Claremont, a small town. I really wanted to live in a smallish town. I was fortunate that I married the man that I did who had this house, so I got to come to Mill Valley. But going on these historical walks, you learned an awful lot, and I often wished that the person who did the walk would be able to keep, but we had to turn them in, the booklets, on which I thought was, I couldn't understand how or why that came about, but you saw parts of Mill Valley, and my children still love Mill Valley. I haven't seen the new book out on the stairs and steps of Mill Valley. I'm interested to see how that's going to be. Have you seen that, David?
Yes, I have.
It's really great.
Very nice, yeah. Beautiful.
I thought it might make good birthday presents for my four daughters.
Absolutely.
This is the Skip Sandberg book?
Yes, that's the one that's coming out.
Just been published.
Yeah. He's having his book signing on Tuesday, I think.
His wife is an Outdoor Art Club member.
By the name of Sandberg?
No.
Oh.
She was a doctor, so she kept her maiden name. I'll figure it out for you.
That's right.
But yeah, I know Skip would sign books for you on Thursday. Let's see. Let's get back to neighborhood stuff.
I was in a neighborhood group here in the, what did we call it? Sycamore Park neighborhood. Well, traffic has been a terrible problem up and down Nelson, and mostly on Nelson Avenue, and we gave some ideas to the city council how we could divert it or shorten it, but they said, no, I don't think so. We even got Betsy Cutler, who was on the council at the time, to come here for a meeting of our group, left the front door open at night so you could hear the noise to make it impressed. We also took them to Berkeley, several of the council members, to show them how the, what do they call them, the diversions and crossing and closing off streets worked in Berkeley, but that didn't seem to sway them at all. So it still is a problem of cars, you know, taking the shortcut through here to go up to Miller Avenue.
Well, you've been here, what, 63 years? Has it gotten better or worse? Or is it about the same?
I've not been here that long. It's gotten worse. My children talk about how they might have played ball in the street. Oh, I don't remember that. But they're aware of how many more cars there are and how quickly people drive on the street. I wouldn't mind putting a block across here. I'd have to go around, but if it meant that you didn't have the cars whizzing back and forth all the time, it would be nice. Traffic is a problem even everywhere in Mill Valley. You wonder, where do they come from? Coming into Mill Valley as much as going out of Mill Valley.
When you first moved here, was it about the same?
As now?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah?
No. I don't think so.
Why do you think that is? Do you think people took public transportation, or?
No, I think people, there are more cars per house. It's the demographics of just, everybody has two cars. Like the little people across the street have two cars that they park on the street. They don't park in their driveway. Of course, the fact we've had such a long driveway, we've had cars parking off the street. It's easy to get creamed with cars sliding by you and not.
I know that traffic is an issue. Do you remember, did the street always go through all the way?
Nelson?
Yes.
Yes. I think it was named for an early person who was killed in World War One? Do you remember?
And was Nelson here before the Goheen development started? Do you know?
I don't know that. You can certainly see how Sycamore has been extended. It's wider here and then it gets narrower, just a little block or so further up towards town. But it wasn't planned to be as wide as that.
Oh, it wasn't?
I mean, it was narrower, and then when they put the Goheen in,
oh, right.
I think that was how they made it wider.
I think they knew there would be more traffic with all the additional houses, maybe.
Yep.
Let's see. You were talking earlier about Ray Strong paintings. Can you tell me how you got interested in those?
Well, when I was teaching in Ross, I had no family members here, to do something different. I took an art class. Ray Strong was the one who had the class. He was tall, booming voice, bright blue eyes, which I find very irresistible, and a nice warm manner about him, so that I knew him maybe in 1950. He was teaching at the College of Marin. This was an extension from the College of Marin. And then early in our married life, we bought one of his pictures, and I probably have owned maybe 6 or 8 of his pictures, all of Marin County. And I find California artists most interesting. Getting into a Butterfield catalog is kind of fun to, you know, these two on the right are, I bought at Butterfield.
And you recognized there was one in the library over the fireplace.
I did. And I, as I said, I can recognize one 50 feet away or better. He has a style that's hard to miss. And I think it's fun to own something of California art in your house, because so much of the stuff changes with developments and more people. And he lived to be 100 years old and came to the Malt showing out in Nicasio in May every year. He had a group of painters down in Santa Barbara, and they would come up and stay with different members of the Malt group out in West Marin and paint, and then they would put them in the show. And the show was in the what is the little white building out there in Nicasio? I can't remember the name of it. It's close to the restaurant out there and across the street from the baseball field. It was on 2 days, and the proceeds from the sale of all of the pictures, some were given to Malt and some were given to, of course, the painter who did it. So Ray came to these, and he often had a picture or two in the show. And he was in a wheelchair by that time, but his mind was as quick as could be. And I sent out Valentine letters with pictures instead of Christmas. Like, Christmas is a lot more fun when you're not trying to do Christmas cards and all. And this would be the Malt show out there, would be in May. And every time he came, he'd say, "Oh, that letter of yours you talked about." He could remember what I had written in the letter or the pictures that I had included in the letter. He was a very warm person. One summer we were away for quite a time, and so he and his wife stayed in our house, and he had a showing of his pictures out in the front yard.
Really?
So we were good friends and corresponded for many years.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, how did you come to have a house in Maine?
We have a summer cottage on the coast of Maine. Since we were in boating, we often were invited to go sailing with people who had bigger boats. And one time we were invited to go, and on board that particular boat was a couple who had come from New York State, and he was in the fundraising business. That's probably not the right term, but he was out in Palo Alto with Stanford helping them on a 6-week program to set up, either with Rockefeller funding or one of his others like that. And they were on the boat that day as guests of the owner of the boat. They were fascinating people. They were probably the age of my parents. They seemed to like Bill and me, and they sent us a magazine because they thought we were nice, them called Down East. And they said, we rent a house there for the summer. Why don't you come sometime? I thought, sure, uh-huh. And then when they asked us a second time, I thought, well, all right. So we did go, and then eventually we bought the house. So we've owned it for close to 40 years. It's a simple little summer house. They turned the water off in October, so you couldn't stay there year-round, and it's just too cold. It's a single-wall construction and not suitable for cold weather, but it's magical, and we have lots of people who rent it who come year after year when we're not there. And blueberries are around the house, and lobsters are available, and we don't have television, and you wash the dishes by hand. We do have electricity, and it's really a lovely spot.
And you replicated your view from Maine of your house in Sonoma.
We did. We bought some property in Sonoma, and I thought, what is going to be the design of this place? And we bought a barn in Maine and had it shipped because it was being taken down, all of the timbers, and we used many of the timbers in building the big house. And I had seen a little house on an island, and I thought it was quite nice. If you go to Healdsburg, you see houses a lot like it, which are one-story with peaked roofs and porches pretty much around it for the hot weather. So that is kind of the way this house is. And we call it the fun house, and I put my grandchildren out there and let them be as noisy as they want to be and stay up all night if they want to and sleep on the floor of sleeping bags. And, it's a lovely spot, and it has a view of the Sonoma Valley, and it's kind of a feeling of we brought Maine to our house. But as I said, in Healdsburg, there are little summer houses that look a lot like this. Nancy's been up there to remember.
We were talking about the Sonoma house. Can you tell me, did you build that one from scratch with the beams from Maine?
Yes. Years and years ago, we had no television out of finances, and the fact I just didn't want it. Our children were busy doing fun things around the house and playing games and reading books, and I thought I wouldn't get along without it. So they'd say, oh, Mama, we don't have television. We're supposed to see something for class. I'd say, well, that's too bad. So I think today they're just as happy that they didn't grow up with the television. And I did believe in public broadcasting, and we took Focus, which was the magazine that KQED put out. And one time they had an ad in there for some property in Sonoma. I had been up in that area with my oldest daughter, who was in the Amigos, which is a health-oriented group. And they went to Central America with summer programs, and they were having a picnic up in that area. And I thought, oh, this is the most beautiful spot up here. So when this property was available, we went to look at it, just to look at it. And we went back a second time and thought, oh, all right, let's see what we can do with finances on this. And we did buy a beautiful lot. And then we were in Maine, and there was a barn that was being taken down because it had slid off of its foundation. Barns 150 years ago didn't have foundations as they do today. They put them on granite pieces. So this barn was coming down, and we happened to be in the area, and these big, huge timbers, some of them were 60 feet long, just gorgeous. So we thought, well, somebody's telling us something. So we bought it for a very nominal bid and had it shipped. They had to cut the 60 footers to fit on a 40-foot bed. But we couldn't put the barn back together because I'm not sure what the right term, the building inspectors, you couldn't, they thought it was just inappropriate or not structurally sound, I guess I'll put it that way. So we've used a lot of the pieces more as decorative, and they look like they're doing the construction, but they're not actually. So I did most of the designing of the house, how I wanted it to be. We had a contractor that was great to work with. He knew just how to manage me and how to manage the house, and we came out with something that we liked a lot. And we had the space to put in this extra little house. And so we took the plans of a house that we'd seen on an island we can see from our cottage. And it's a little white house with a porch all the way around it. As I said before, in Healdsburg, in the northern area, you do see these little houses with one story and porches all around them, wide porches you can sit in. Maybe there are vines growing around it. So we have one of those, and we call it the fun house. It has a mini kitchen and a bathroom and lots of space you can stretch out on the floor with pads and sleep, or sleep out on the porch outside if you want to. Anyhow, that's our house in Sonoma. And with not having Bill around, I'm just not going up there very much, which is too bad. But I find it's just more than I can manage to do.
Tell me about your girls.
We're ready to start. We're rolling.
Okay, Florence, we were talking about your house up in Sonoma and that you were not using it as much lately since Bill's not around. Do your daughters go up very often?
They do sometimes. We were there for Thanksgiving. It's a little different because our oldest grandchildren are working now, and they don't have 2 weeks off. Like Christmas is coming up. We used to go after Christmas and stay through New Year's. Now they've got to stay at work, and my granddaughters are getting interim jobs, like working at Old Navy or ushering at the theater or something like that, so they can't come. It's kind of different. But we're talking about travel. We did a lot of car camping. Bill and I designed a little trailer that carried all of our camping stuff. And we did a lot of the parks in the western part of the United States and out into Canada with our Volkswagen bus, which is a great thing to spread kids out so they're not on top of one another. Camping was an inexpensive way to go, and you could stop and start and go where you want to go. It was a lot of fun. We had several trips to Europe with our children. I went when I was pregnant with our fourth one, about halfway through the pregnancy. And I must say, people treat you very nicely when you're traveling. And they got more or lot or not, we were taken for English people, which was okay with me. And we had we bought a Volkswagen bus at that time in Europe and traveled around with that and had some other trips. And we've had a number of exchange students staying here, some a half year, some shorter times, and that was very happy experiences. And the last time we went to Europe, Bill and I stopped at each one of the families of whose children that we had. And I must say, that was great. And I did exchange my third daughter with a family in Switzerland and in Oslo, and I had their children here, which is great. You tend to do a lot for the visiting child because you know your child is going to have some nice experiences. So we've done international stuff that way.
And who was the exchange through? Was it through TAM or?
No, it was word of mouth. You knew somebody who knew somebody who did something like that, and it worked out that way.
And were they in high school?
No, they were older. Some of them went to the College of Marin. Could take two or three classes that they were interested in.
Okay. What was your favorite country?
Oh, dear. I don't know. I think if I went, you'd have to be in Paris at least a week. You know, why would you go to Europe if you didn't go to Paris? I guess that would be what I like as well as anything. We bought Swiss travel passes that go traveling for a week in Switzerland and get on anything that moves with us. With a holiday pass, that's fun. Rented a car in England. Driving on the left side of the road is not easy. Your reaction is so fixed that you have to stop and think what you're doing. You asked daughters. Our daughters live in this general area. Two are in Nevada, one's in Santa Rosa, and one in Petaluma. So they're close by. And I'm happy to say they all like each other, and they support one another. They're very tight with their feelings and what they can do for one another, and they'll drop whatever they're doing if somebody else needs something done for them, which is, I grew up as an only child, and to me it's a great joy.
That's really nice.
Yeah, it is.
And so they all went to Park School?
Went to Park School, went to TAM High. Two went to the University of California in Santa Barbara. One of them went to College of Marin and a funny college in San Francisco called New College, kind of an avant-garde thing. And the fourth one, as I was telling David, hated school and is now in the last part of her nursing program at the College of Marin. So you never know what somebody is going to do if they are motivated enough to do it. The nursing program is very intense, and she sometimes has to be at the hospital over in San Francisco maybe by 6:30 or 7 in the morning. And she has two children and a husband. And so it's a juggling act, but it's lovely.
That's great.
Yep. I have a granddaughter. My oldest granddaughter is in the Peace Corps in Cambodia. She's having a very hard time with that, getting used to the food, which is rice, and all kinds of odd things put into the rice. The weather, the toilets, which are potties, which is, I think she would love to see a flush toilet again in her life. The weather is incredible, hot, you know, 95 to 100 and 100% humidity, and she's teaching English to a class of 70 at a time. how do you teach English to 70 people at one time? I haven't yet found out. And she talks on her cell phone recently at Thanksgiving time. She was on Skype. It boggles my mind. I mean, it boggles my mind when I pick up my phone and I can dial somewhere in the world, but the cell phone bit and all this other, that she is halfway around the world and can, it's different.
Do you have a computer that you use to Skype with her?
I don't. I gave up my old Apple and I'm relying on snail mail and the telephone, and I'm very happy with it. So I don't get a lot of spam and I don't get other stuff. And it's all right.
As your girls were growing up here in Mill Valley, what was their favorite time of year?
Oh, I say Christmas maybe, because you have a lot of fun things to do and they were home for a long enough period of time. And 13 years between the eldest, one went to college, the eldest went to college when the others went to kindergarten. So, yes. So kind of do different things at different times of the year, and you're still doing Easter eggs when somebody is long past that. And people would say to my husband, don't you wish you had a son? He'd say, no, I love having four girls and having one that could sail across the ocean with you or ride horses or things like that. It's all right.
I think it was all right.
I think you've covered a lot of me.
How about the city government? Have you noticed any changes in the way the city's been run?
No. I've been to some council meetings now and then when it seemed something was terribly pressing, but now I kind of let them run themselves.
But you felt like it was pretty well run most of the time?
Yeah, you can do just so much. And I think of what the city taxes are, property taxes on houses, and the rate that they change ownership, you see, houses for sale, I think that there must be a great deal of money coming from city property taxes into this as compared to other poor little towns that have just ordinary little houses but still have to run the same sort of fire department, schools, and so on.
Yeah, I think we're fortunate.
Yeah. And I'm happy about Proposition 13 for people like us who live in a house long enough that your property taxes are greatly reduced.
What do you think about the library and new additions and that sort of thing?
Well, I worked very hard on the several bond issues that we had. I think this was the third or the fourth bond issue we had to finally put the library in. And one of the objections to that was, you're going to use up city property parks where people could come and sit under the trees and enjoy it. You think of the number of people who are sitting in the library and enjoying that space. And I think the building is utterly magnificent and fits Mill Valley perfectly. And it's the one spot that I bring out-of-town guests to come and see. Park the car, get out of the car, come and walk through the library, and they ooh and ah on the windows as they are and the floors and everything about it. I just think this is perfect. I did go with a friend who was living on a smallish town on Long Island. He took me into their new library. They had a spot downstairs that did not have carpeting. It was wooden floors where they sold muffins and coffee and had chairs. And I thought, that sounds pretty nice. Couldn't we do something like that? But didn't seem to go over with people who were on the library board.
I think the library is a beautiful building and it is changing. And I'm glad, I'm very pleased that you like the changes.
Oh, yes.
When the girls were little, did you go downtown a lot?
Did. We used to go Friday night to the library, even when it was over on Level. Pick out books and then go get ice cream and come home. And that was the Friday night activity. And yes, children who have been book readers all their lives. And I read to them and they read them by themselves. And going to the library was a great joy.
Where'd you go get ice cream?
I think it was Baskin and Robbins. Right. That's my recollection.
It's been there that long?
I like to think so. I can't think where else we would have gotten ice cream. I don't know. And of course, the changes are going out where the bridge was across, going out of Mill Valley, the big timbered bridge before they...
Richardson Bay Bridge?
No, I'm talking about the ridge right here at the end of Blythedale, going out to the highway. Took it down and filled it in and then put the road in as it is now.
Wow, that was timber?
Ask the Jessups. They used some of the timbers. I don't know whether they... Or maybe they took theirs from the trestle over in Tiburon. I'm not sure. But that was when they put the clover leaf in at the highway. And as I said, when we first moved here, I did. You had to cross the highway by just watching for the traffic and then scooting across. Hard to imagine.
Yeah, that is hard to imagine. Were there, do you remember any kind of trains or electric buses or anything?
No.
Coming in and out?
I don't. All I did was watch for the red truck that my husband drove. The fact that his business was in San Rafael, he was going the opposite direction of the heavy-duty traffic, so that and the truck was kind of noisy. You could hear about a block away. And sometimes my children would walk down to the corner of Blythedale and then climb in the back end of the truck and ride back with their father to our house.
That's about all I have to ask you.
I can't think of anything more when I've talked so much about myself.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else we wanted to talk about.
I just know that whenever we go away, we're thrilled to come back to Mill Valley. And crossing the Golden Gate Bridge is kind of like going on a magical moat. You know, the bridge. Never regretted living in... I chose to come to this area when I was looking for a teaching job. And I've never regretted being here or in this area, Mill Valley in specifically.
Do you have any memories? I know that from time to time we've had some pretty good floods. Do you have any memories of any of the big floods?
Flies?
Floods.
Floods. Well, I didn't have the flood that you had at your house, and we would take cars out of the garage. And we could get maybe 8 or 10 inches of water in this backyard. But as I said, when the tide goes out, then the water goes out, and that's the way it is. No, we've not had the flood that I know that you did.
Oh, too bad. I'm glad you didn't have our flood. Well, Florence, thank you so much for letting us come into your house and for talking to us.
Well, I'm delighted to be chosen.
Well, thank you.